From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast in which Hank talked with biologist Jonathan Wells, author of Zombie Science, More Icons of Evolution. Let's now join Hank as he introduces Dr. Wells.
And welcome to another edition of Hank Unplugged, the podcast that's bringing to you some of the most interesting, inspirational, informative people on the planet, and in this case, one of the funniest. In fact, the book that I want to talk a little bit about during this podcast is a book titled Zombie Science, More Icons of Evolution, and the cover itself is side-slapping funny, but a lot of other things we're going to talk about. My podcast today is with Jonathan Wells. He's senior fellow with the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture in Seattle. He holds a PhD in molecular and cell biology from the University of California, Berkeley, as well as a PhD in religious studies from Yale University. His books include Icons of Evolution, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Darwinism and Intelligent Design, which came out in 2006, The Myth of Junk DNA. But this book, I read this book last night. I had perused the book before. I'd never really read the book before. Zombie Science, More Icons of Evolution is a book that if you do not have this book, you've got to get this book. And while you're at it, buy a bunch of copies you can give away. I've often said how one views their origins will ultimately determine how they live their life. If you think that you're a function of random chance, that you arose from the primordial slime, you're going to live your life by a different standard than if you know you're created by an intelligent designer, an uncaused first cause. So I am just delighted, Jonathan Wells, to have you on the podcast. I've been waiting for this moment for a long time, and we're finally doing it.
I'm delighted to be here, Hank.
You've got so many great lines in this book, and I want to talk about it during the podcast, but one of the funniest things about this book, quite frankly, and this is quintessential Jonathan Wells, is that you have a diagram in the book for how to make a cover out of a brown paper bag so that if you're reading the book in polite spaces, no one will know what you're reading.
Yes, because reading it on a college campus, for example, could actually be dangerous to someone's career.
I mean, that's in itself, it's funny on the one hand, the brown paper bag story and the diagram, but on the other, it's kind of sad because if you want to be tenured in the academic universities around the world, you better not be reading or distributing this kind of information.
That's right. It is sad.
You titled the book Zombie Science, and you have an icon on the cover of the book. And obviously no one can see the cover of the book unless they go to the web, and they ought to go to the web and see this. You can see it at equip.org. It's worth going to equip.org just to see the icon. Explain the icon for us. I mean, obviously the icon has become the argument. In this case, you've taken the icon and exposed the icon for just how bad an argument it really is.
Well, the cover shows an icon that's been around for a long time of an ape-like, stooped-over ape-like creature gradually morphing into a modern human being. And what's different about the book cover, of course, is that the modern human being turns out to be a zombie holding a page from Darwin's Origin of Species.
And that is the whole idea behind the book, Zombie Science, More Icons of Evolution. We'll talk about those in a little bit, but tell us what zombie science is. I think you're explaining it as materialistic science masquerading as empirical science.
Yes, that's exactly true. For me, good science is empirical science. That is, we formulate a hypothesis and we test it against the evidence. If it fits the evidence, we keep it. If it doesn't, we throw it away or modify it. That's empirical science, and that's how science should be done. but there are other meanings of the word science. One is consensus science, which is just the majority opinion of current practicing scientists, which often turns out to be wrong if you look back at the history of science. But a third and more disturbing definition is the search for natural explanations for everything. Now, it's okay to search for natural explanations, but if you insist that everything has a materialistic or naturalistic explanation, it's basically applied materialistic philosophy rather than empirical science. And by zombie science, I mean the practice of telling materialistic stories, even though they're empirically dead, they don't fit the evidence. Telling those stories and making it look as though they're empirical science. So they're empirically dead, but they keep stalking the halls of science and education.
So for empirical science, the highest value is the truth. For a materialistic science, the highest value, and I think this is kind of a clever turn of phrase as well in the context in which it's used, the highest value becomes survival of the fittest. So you've got in the book, and I think it's important, maybe you can expand on this a little bit. You've already touched on it, but you got zombie science, materialistic science masquerading as empirical science. You have empirical science that's testing that is consistent with the evidence. You have consensus science, which you just described, and then you have technological science, advances in medicine and technology and the like. So there are different kinds of sciences, and I suppose that begs the question, isn't it really important for us when we use terms that we define the terms, because it really has to do not necessarily with the word, but the meaning you pour into the word?
Absolutely. So, for example, the so-called March for Science back in April was really a march for consensus science, not a march for empirical science. It was a march to pressure lawmakers and taxpayers into supporting the current consensus on things like climate change and evolution. But empirical science is quite different. It's much more fluid. It changes as the evidence accumulates. And it's not the same as consensus science or materialistic science.
When you talk about things like evolution, you're talking about something that is a dogma so entrenched, particularly in the American psyche, that if you go against this, I mean, you are going against the weight of all academia. The same thing is true with respect to climate change. I know as president of the Christian Research Institute, I'm oftentimes told by people inside and outside the organization, let's lay off the whole issue of climate change, because the moment you even begin to question consensus science, you're seen as someone that, well, is an obscurantist that's lost your brain somewhere in the narthex of a church.
That's true. Now, you brought up evolution. Actually, I brought up evolution. Like the word science, the word evolution can have many meanings. So it can mean simply change over time, and I've never met anyone who denies that things change over time. It can mean minor changes within existing species. Again, I don't know anyone who denies that. We can see it in our own families. It can mean that there's a history to life on Earth. So there used to be things around that aren't with us anymore. And some things like human beings are here that weren't always here. So in those senses, evolution is not controversial. But Charles Darwin proposed an explanation for all those changes that was purely materialistic. He denied that there was any design. He said it's all chance. And his theory actually won out not because of evidence, but because it fit the materialistic temper of the times. And in that sense, evolution is controversial, and in fact, it's a zombie science.
Yeah, you point out that Darwin's theory was that microevolution plus time equals macroevolution, and that that is a hypothesis that is starving for evidence. And the evidence wasn't good in Darwin's time, and certainly is even worse today.
That's quite true. Darwin had actually no evidence for his theory that macroevolution, that is, large-scale changes, come from small changes given enough time. He had no evidence for natural selection. He was completely wrong about the nature of heredity. He didn't know anything about genetics. And basically, it was materialistic philosophy masquerading as empirical science.
You've been accused, particularly when you wrote Icons of Evolution, of being like a petulant child that's throwing a tantrum, that's cherry-picking earnest errors out of these tomes that are credible in and of themselves, but you're finding this little nitpicky mistake that's made analogous to a cartoon having Superman with a green cape as opposed to a red cape on, and you've made a cottage industry out of these nitpicky errors, and therefore you shouldn't be taken seriously. How do you respond to that?
Well, if the things that I point out were textbook errors, they would have been corrected. And there are many examples in the history of textbook writing of errors that have been corrected. But in the case of the Icons of Evolution, the evidence for Darwin's theory, they're not corrected. They're still there. In fact, I wrote Icons in 2000, and now all of those icons are still with us, and more.
Yeah, exactly. The title of your book, Zombie Science, More Icons of Evolution. So it's not as though they've jettisoned the icons that are demonstrably false. They just kept shuffling forth more icons out of the dustbins of people's imaginations. I want to talk about some of those icons. Again, the book Icons of Evolution, it was, I mean, I always promoting books. I love books. It was one of my all-time favorites. It's very, very readable. And this one is in the exact same category. Very, very readable. But when you get through with this book, you're in the state of saying, how could anyone in the world buy into evolution in the 21st century? It might have been one thing to buy into it in 19th century science or in the 20th century, but how can anyone buy this particular outdated, completely false premise? And obviously we're talking about evolution in the sense of macroevolution. How in the world can people buy into this theory in the 21st century?
Well, it seems to me it's a commitment to materialism that amounts to a religion. And it's a belief that refuses to consider the evidence. And so when someone attacks the evidence for evolution, for Darwinian evolution, it's as though they're attacking a religion. And the people who prop up that religion respond quite nastily sometimes.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is the difficulty, and I know you've already touched on this, but I think we have to really knock this one out of the park. Anytime you talk about evolution, and again, we're talking about evolution in the sense of blind materialistic processes, anytime you talk about this in a pejorative sense, in a negative sense, people will say, look, you've got to be out of touch with reality. Prominent politicians, presidents, pundits, people in all walks of life who are smart people buy this theory, lock, stock, and barrel. How in the world can you swim against that tide?
Well, it's quite a challenge because, as you say, there are powerful forces and powerful people lined up on the side of unguided evolution. But in science, we're supposed to look at the evidence. And so I encourage people to look at the evidence for themselves and question the claims of these people who are insisting that unguided evolution is a fact. It just doesn't fit the evidence.
So talk about the price you pay when you take the position that you've taken. Obviously, you've written some books that are very, very popular, but what is the price you pay or someone like you pays for swimming upstream?
Well, in my case, I've been fortunate enough to be affiliated with the Discovery Institute in Seattle, so I have a job. In many cases, sad to say, people have lost their jobs for doing what I do. If they don't lose their jobs, they suffer grievously at their job. They're stripped of funding. They lose the respect of their colleagues. They're shunned. They may have no students or research facilities available to them. And whether it's them or me, there's always a steady drumbeat of insult and ridicule.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with biologist Dr. Jonathan Wells. In 2017, we became familiar with the term fake news. In 2018, we want you to become familiar with the term fake science, or zombie science, as Dr. Jonathan Wells calls it in his book. The job of a scientist is to follow the evidence wherever it leads. Unfortunately, many scientists are failing to do their job in order to maintain the materialist manifesto's status quo. It's time to be equipped with the truth and put an end to this fake zombie science. To receive your copy of Zombie Science, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. We have the perfect resource to help you stand for truth regarding creation. It's Hank Hanegraaff's flip chart, Memorable Keys to the Farce of Evolution. If you've ever seen a flip chart from our Hankronym series, you know they work. They're compact, portable, and packed with solid biblical truths you need to know so you can stand against false teaching such as the theory of evolution. Using the inherently memorable acronym F-A-R-C-E, Hank equips you to share the news that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Hank wants to bless you with his flip chart as thanks for your donation today to support the Christian Research Institute and this Bible Answer Man broadcast. So please call 888-7000-CRI to request your flip chart and share your donation. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. In the eyes of materialistic scientists who are the guardians of Darwinian dogma, the idea that you and I are the result of any intelligent purpose or design is quaint at best and delusional at worst. The tragedy is that this brand of materialistic evolution remains triumphant because too many Christians are either still unaware of the ruse or ill-equipped to engage these lies head-on. The fatal flaws in Darwinian evolutionary theory are growing more transparent, and it's well-informed Christians like you shining a spotlight on its empirical bankruptcy using resources like Zombie Science by Dr. Jonathan Wells that times like these desperately need. To receive your copy of Zombie Science, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Science has enriched our lives and led to countless discoveries, but Dr. Jonathan Wells argues that it's being corrupted. Empirical science is devolving into zombie science, shuffling along unfazed by opposing evidence. Discredited icons of evolution rise from the dead, while more icons, equally bogus, join their ranks. Like a B-horror movie, they just keep coming. Zombies are make-believe. But zombie science is real, and it threatens not just science, but our whole culture. Is there any solution? Wells is sure of it, and he points the way in his book, Zombie Science. To receive your copy, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Now, let's rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and biologist Jonathan Wells in their conversation on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast.
So you have a very difficult task. If you stand with Jonathan Wells, you have the difficult position of standing against the very people who control the research funding, who control what gets into scientific journals, faculty appointments. There's a resistance to all who dare challenge the paradigm. And I think that even beyond that, and maybe you can comment on this for us, it's the old adage that paradigms only allow us to see what paradigms allow us to see, which is to say that we don't think as much about our paradigms as we think with our paradigms. So once we're in the water, the macroevolutionary waters, it's very, very difficult to see clearly or to see that, yeah, I mean, you're in this water and you can't think outside the lens of this particular paradigm.
Yes, and the guy who first pointed that out, at least in, clearly, was Thomas Kuhn back in the 1960s, who wrote a book called The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. And he pointed out that paradigms exert a very strong influence over how people think and how they behave, and they're very difficult to change. And it's not always a matter of evidence. It's more a matter of politics and money and power.
And I think your humor goes a long ways to getting people to consider the absurdity of their paradigms. I want to talk about some of the examples of zombie science. The icon, as I said, becomes the argument. And this is certainly the case when it comes to Darwin's Tree of Life, which was not only uprooted by the Cambrian explosion, but I've written about this as well. The fossil record shows no evidence of the origin of species by means of common descent and natural selection. And yet you see Darwin's Tree of Life everywhere. In fact, you see it on the cover of your book. You have the zombie carrying a copy of Darwin's Tree of Life.
Yes, it's actually the only illustration in Darwin's Origin of Species. And it's a branching tree diagram, which starts with a single species at the bottom and then branches over time into more and more species as we approach the modern day. And it's a very powerful image. And you're right, the Cambrian explosion, which is the sudden appearance of most of the major types of animals about 550 million years ago, that posed a problem for Darwin. He knew about it, but he sort of said, well, we just don't have enough fossils yet. But the more fossils people have collected, the clearer it has become that this branching tree pattern doesn't fit the fossil record. But people who have this in their minds, who have this paradigm, look at the fossil record and they see a tree. And it's very hard to dislodge that illusion, no matter how much evidence we accumulate.
I mean, it really works for the uninitiated. I mean, if you don't really know the arguments and you don't know the backstory The icons are so powerful. Another one is the ape to man icon, and you did double duty on the cover of the book because you had Darwin's Tree of Life there, the icon, and then you have the ape to man icon. But what did Darwin say at some future period, not very distant as measured by centuries, the civilized races of man will almost certainly exterminate and replace the savage races. I memorized that a long, long time ago and written about that over the years. But the hell of it, as it were, is that in Darwin's ranking, and a lot of people argue about this, but if you read The Descent of Man, there's no argument whatsoever. And what I'm quoting is from Descent. In Darwin's ranking, the Caucasian is on the top, then down at the bottom, dangling at the edge of humanity, you have what he wrote about as the Negro or the Australian, and they're just a hair's breadth away from the most human-like apes. So here you have Darwin very clearly taking the whole idea, the evolutionary idea, to its logical extension with the crowning jewels of God's creation, humankind.
Absolutely, and I think that was an underwriting purpose of his theory, was to make humans little more than highly evolved animals. So there's nothing special about human beings. Certainly we're not created in the image of God, for Darwin.
So you have people like Dawkins, Richard Dawkins, who tries to absolve his hero Darwin from this kind of racism. But this is pure and simple racism. I mean, and when you extend it to humanity, you're saying that you've got to get rid of the unfit, because if the unfit survive indefinitely, they're going to infect the fit with their unfit genes, and then evolution is not going to be possible. So you have a whole eugenics movement that's closely linked, inextricably linked, I should say, to the evolutionary paradigm.
That's true. And, you know, we spoke a few minutes ago about the scientific consensus. 100 years ago, the scientific consensus in America, the scientific establishment, was very pro-eugenics. And thousands of people were forcibly sterilized because of it. So there's one example of the consensus being, you know, overturned eventually. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness, yeah. You know, you've brought this up in your books, but I think this is one of the icons that we ought to talk about for a few minutes at least. That's Darwinius Macaulay. I love the name Macaulay. Also nicknamed Ida, the closest thing to a direct ancestor, the Mona Lisa, the eighth wonder of the world, the hyperbole that was used with respect to Ida or Darwinius Macaulay was quite over the top. But, you know, you have these icons trotted out, and then after a while, you don't hear about them anymore. They sort of fade into the recesses of our memory, and just about the time we're starting to think maybe this was all a big hoax to start with, another icon shuffles out.
Quite right. Well, that's zombie science for you. There's a story to be told. The story is that we evolved by unguided natural processes from earlier forms of life. And so periodically someone trots out a new fossil, a newly discovered fossil, of what they think was that ancestor. And that's what happened with Ida. It turned out to be actually a lemur, not anything like a human being at all. But that's zombie science at work.
Zombie science. And part of the narrative with respect to zombie science is the hippo-like animals evolving into whales. And this actually had its genesis with Darwin himself. At the time, people thought it was kind of funny, but in his time, it was bears evolving into whales. But as you point out in your book, I mean, the idea of a hippo-like animal evolving into a whale, it's a whale of a tale. That's the bottom line.
It is. Again, it's a story in search of examples. And so examples were found. Darwin didn't have any. He had a, you know, an imaginary story of a bear swimming with its mouth open and eventually evolving into a whale. But in the 1980s, scientists began finding fossils of creatures that they called walking whales, that they said were intermediate between land animals and whales. Well, the walking whales, it turns out, are a lot like sea otters or sea lions. You know, they walked on land. They spent a lot of time in the water, probably, but they were a far cry from whales. Whales live their entire lives in the water, and they're actually very different from sea lions and sea otters. And so in the fossil record, the zombie science storytellers want it to look like there's a smooth transition from these land animals to fully aquatic whales, when in fact there's a sharp break between them. But the story goes on anyway.
Yeah, so talk about that a little bit more, because I think this bears elaboration. You know, how in the world can a hippo-like animal evolve into a whale? When you start to think about sonar and blowholes and skin that's impermeable to water and these kinds of things, I mean, this enormous, enormous leap of faith once you get into the minutiae.
Well, it is an enormous leap of faith, and again, it's the story that takes highest priority. In fact, we don't know of a mechanism that could do the sort of things that it would take to turn a land animal into a whale. It'd be enormously difficult. And rather than provide the mechanisms, people just repeat the story. Every now and then, they'll come up with some gene, some stretch of DNA that they think might be involved. But in every case, the ones that they have come up with turned out to be basically irrelevant.
So it seems to me that the narrative that Christians have faith and scientists have facts is really misguided, in the sense that what scientists really have, at least scientists that are promoting this narrative, is they've got stories.
That's true. I mean, their faith... I've heard people say it, you know, it takes more faith to believe in unguided evolution than to believe in God, because, you know, the evidence is so against it. And it's true. It takes a large measure of faith. I heard a friend say a few years ago, a Christian friend, that faith is belief in things for which we have no evidence. And I disagreed with her. I said, I don't think that's true. I think faith is, as the classic theological tradition says, faith is belief in things unseen. But that doesn't mean we don't have evidence. My faith in God is based on what I consider to be evidence. The evolutionist's belief in unguided macroevolution is more based on a faith in materialism than it is on evidence.
And the fact that something can't be seen obviously doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. I mean, there's lots of clear evidence for that. You can't see the law of gravity, for example.
Right.
And then you have Darwin's finches. I mean, was Darwin actually inspired by the finches to formulate the theory of evolution, as the narrative of the story goes, or is this just another story?
Well, the textbooks still portray it that way. They say Darwin, when Darwin visited the Galapagos Islands in the 1830s, he was inspired by these finches to formulate his theory. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. He actually paid very little attention to the finches.
We'll pick up Hank's conversation with Dr. Jonathan Wells in just a few moments. There was once a time when the fall of the Berlin Wall seemed unimaginable, yet that day came. Likewise, the prevailing cultural conformance to the dogma of Darwinian evolution seems so pervasive that it's hard to imagine an end to this era. But Dr. Jonathan Wells believes that truth will prevail, and uses the example of vampires to explain how. Wells writes that battling vampires presents the best metaphor for fighting dogmatic materialism masquerading as empirical science. One way to kill a vampire, according to popular lore, is to expose it to direct sunlight. To end the reign of Darwinism, it is essential to be equipped with the light of truth. To receive your copy of Zombie Science, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be back after the break with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. The popular television series Cosmos opens with Neil deGrasse Tyson proclaiming the need to follow the evidence wherever it leads and question everything. But are Tyson and his materialist cohorts complying with their scientific code of conduct? When it comes to the issue of origins, they most certainly are not. In his book, Zombie Science, Dr. Jonathan Wells points out the failure of so many scientists to follow the evidence wherever it may lead. Wells argues that empirical science is devolving into zombie science, shuffling along unfazed by opposing evidence. Is there a solution? Wells is sure of it and shows the way in his new book. To receive your copy of Zombie Science, simply call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's many outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. The issue of where humans came from isn't just an apologetic issue, it's the apologetic issue, because how you view your origin ultimately determines how you live your life. That's why Hank Hanegraaff created his flip chart, Memorable Keys to the Farce of Evolution, and he wants to get it into your hands today. It's a flip chart in our Hankronym series. And by using the acronym FARCE, F-A-R-C-E, you can stand with God's truth against false paradigms like the theory of evolution. It's a compact, user-friendly tool, and Hank wants to equip you with this important resource as thanks for your donation today in support of the Christian Research Institute and this Bible Answer Man broadcast. So request your FARCE flip chart when you call with your donation, 888-7000-CRI, or go to equip.org. Let's again pick up Hank Hanegraaff and biologist Jonathan Wells in their conversation on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast.
Was Darwin actually inspired by the finches?
Well, the textbooks still portray it that way. They say when Darwin visited the Galapagos Islands in the 1830s, he was inspired by these finches to formulate his theory. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. He actually paid very little attention to the finches. They weren't named Darwin's finches until a century later. And only then because they appeared to be a good example of an ancient ancestor, a bird arriving from the mainland, say, evolving by divergence into separate species to populate the islands. So it's called, the technical term is adaptive radiation. So the original ancestors supposedly split into these different species because of different foods or environmental pressures or something like that. And so that's the standard view of Darwin's finches. In the 1970s, some very courageous biologists camped out on one of the islands, and there was a severe drought that killed about 85% of the birds on that island. And the birds that survived had, on average, slightly larger beaks so they could crack the harder seeds that were left. And at the time, the biologists predicted that with a drought every 20 years, this could produce a new species in less than two centuries. Problem is, when the rains came back, everything went back to normal. There was no net evolution. So this sort of one-line extrapolation into a new species never happened.
Why has the war on intelligent design become so ferocious? I mean, it seems like it was fairly tepid at the time that people were spouting in the Christian world this idea of young earth creationism. Didn't seem like the war was as ferocious as it was when the intelligent design movement came along and said, look, all we're trying to do is follow the truth wherever it leads.
Well, you're quite right. When I studied the 19th century Darwinian controversies at Yale, I was surprised to find that the age of the earth actually played very little role back then, because most Christians had accepted the idea that the first few chapters of Genesis had some metaphorical phrases in them, and that actually there was a long period of time involved. So the crux of the matter back then, and now, I would say, is design. Darwin abolished design. And that's what produced the most controversy back in the 19th century, and that's the heart of the matter now. The intelligent design movement is threatening the very foundation of Darwin's materialistic philosophy.
I mean, is it going to fall like the Berlin Wall in your estimation?
I think it will. I predict in Zombie Science that the naturalistic science that masquerades as empirical science is so full of holes right now, empirically, that it will eventually collapse.
But there's a lot of counter evidence against intelligent design, at least supposed counter evidence. I mean, you take your eyes, for example, you hear it over and over again. The eye is ill-designed. If you're going to design an eye properly, you wouldn't design it the way our eyes are designed.
Quite right. I'm glad you brought that up. That's actually one of the additional icons that I discussed in Zombie Science. In, I guess it was the 1970s, Richard Dawkins argued that the eye is badly designed because the cells that detect light in our eyes point away from the light toward the back of the eye. And he argued that no intelligent designer would ever do it that way. And others have followed suit. Textbook writer Kenneth Miller and various other Darwinian biologists have likewise argued that the eye is badly designed. Well, it turns out that in the human eye, in fact, the eyes of all vertebrates, animals with backbones, the light-sensing cells have very high metabolic requirements. They need a lot of blood and oxygen and nutrients. And so there's a thick layer of blood cells, blood vessels, rather, at the back of the eye that nourish these light-sensing cells. If the eye were constructed the way Dawkins and other Darwinists say it should be, the blood would be between the light and the light-sensing cells, and since blood is opaque, we would be blind. So it's just utter nonsense to say that the eye is badly designed. And what's more interesting to me is that the evidence of the good design of the eye had all been published before Dawkins and the others started their argument. They just didn't bother to check the scientific literature. But it's long been known that the eye functions as well as it does because it is so well designed.
You have another icon, and I'm particularly interested in this one. It's the first time I read it when I was reading your book yesterday, and that is the Darwinian medicine icon. I don't know if it's called that exactly in the book, but that's what I recall, the Darwinian medicine. And again, I'm particularly interested in this because it has to do with cancer, and I happen to have cancer. But how did antibiotic resistance and cancer surface icons of evolution, when in reality they're properly cast as icons of materialistic storytelling?
Oh, it's a good question. Antibiotic resistance occurs when bacteria are exposed to something that poisons them, and a few of the bacterial cells can resist the poison, and they survive and divide. And it's a medical problem, obviously, because if I take an antibiotic to kill the bacteria infecting me, I want it to kill them all and not just produce antibiotic resistance bacteria. That's been used as an icon of evolution because it shows survival of the fittest. But it's really an icon of microevolution. The species doesn't change. If the antibiotic is removed, typically the bacteria go back to the way they were. Tuberculosis bacteria remain tuberculosis bacteria no matter what. And so it's not really an icon of the origin of the species or anything like that. Cancer has recently been used as an icon of evolution because cancer cells divide autonomously. You know, they escape the controls of the body and sort of live their own lives. And they undergo mutations and various changes. And some people have pointed this out as an icon of evolution, which is kind of ironic in a sense. The icon for a theory is something that actually destroys life rather than produces it. It's sort of the opposite of what a good Darwinian theory would need. But putting all these things together has been something called Darwinian medicine. And according to the advocates of Darwinian medicine, since nothing in biology makes sense except in the light of evolution, nothing in medicine makes sense except in the light of evolution either. Problem is, I don't agree with the first statement. I think most things in life do make sense without any need for referring to evolution. But in the case of medicine, evolutionary biology has actually contributed nothing. Its advocates really just use it as a way of telling evolutionary stories for how we got here and why the body gets sick and things like that. It hasn't actually contributed anything to improving health or overcoming disease. It's just a storytelling enterprise.
Another icon, you know, that we ought to touch on. Your book is just full of great examples: homology and vertebrate limbs, similarities in limb bones used as evidence that vertebrates, animals with backbones, as you described it earlier on, that they're descended from a common ancestor. But as you point out in the book, homologous structures are defined as those structures that descended from a common ancestor. And therefore, at the end of the day, what you have is a circular argument.
Yes. Way back when, in Darwin's time, homology referred to similarity of structure and position. So the bones in our hands, for example, have similar structure and position to the bones in a porpoise flipper or a bird's wing, and so on. But in order for that to work, for a theory of evolution, we have to have a mechanism that produces homology. You know, the bones are not in the egg, the fertilized egg. They develop later. So two mechanisms were proposed eventually. One was similar developmental pathways. So homologous features, according to that idea, come from the same place in the egg, the same cells in the egg, in the different vertebrates. Another theory was that the homologous structures were produced by similar genes, similar stretches of DNA. Well, both of those ideas turn out not to fit the evidence. So we don't have a mechanism for producing homologies. So to sort of, shortcut things, Darwin's followers redefined homology to mean similarity due to common ancestry. Well, okay, but once you do that, you can't say that homology is evidence for common ancestry, for evolution. Because it's like saying, okay, A is homologous to B, Y is A homologous to B because A and B come from a common ancestor. Okay, then therefore A and B prove that they come from a common ancestor. You're just sort of repeating yourself. That's the circular argument.
You also wrote about a myth of junk DNA. What is junk DNA?
Well, when James Watson and Francis Crick discovered the structure of DNA in the early 1950s, the idea was that DNA carries the genes, and this produces the features of the organism. Well, DNA works, as Watson and Crick pointed out, by encoding proteins. Yet by 1970, it was clear that most of our DNA does not code for protein. In fact, about 98% of it does not. So Richard Dawkins and others proposed that this means that the non-protein coding DNA is like a parasite, a piece of junk that's just sort of hitched a ride on the good DNA in the course of evolution. So it's put there by molecular accidents and really does nothing except ride along. And this was used as an argument for evolution, this 98% of non-protein coding DNA. In fact, in the 2006 book by Francis Collins, The Language of God, this junk DNA was part of his main argument for why we evolved by unguided mechanisms.
Hopefully he's let that go.
He did. He did. To his credit, a year later or so, he said, I no longer use the term, because he knew very well by that time that most of that so-called junk DNA is not junk at all. Although it does not code for proteins, it performs other functions in the cell. And so there's a huge battle going on right now between scientists who study the DNA and conclude that most of it is functional, and other scientists who come from an evolutionary perspective who argue that, no, most of it has to be junk because evolutionary theory tells us so. And so it's a very interesting battle between evidence-based science and zombie science.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. To listen to this Hank Unplugged podcast interview with biologist Jonathan Wells in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. If you'd like to stand shoulder to shoulder with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute in the battle for life and truth, and receive as our thanks for your gift Dr. Wells' book, Zombie Science, More Icons of Evolution, call our resource consultants now at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write to us at CRI, P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. In the eyes of materialistic scientists who are the guardians of Darwinian dogma, the idea that you and I are the result of any intelligent purpose or design is quaint at best and delusional at worst. The tragedy is that this brand of materialistic evolution remains triumphant because too many Christians are either still unaware of the ruse or ill-equipped to engage these lies head-on. The fatal flaws in Darwinian evolutionary theory are growing more transparent, and its well-informed Christians like you shining a spotlight on its empirical bankruptcy using resources like Zombie Science by Dr. Jonathan Wells that times like these desperately need. To receive your copy of Zombie Science, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org.